It's time now for Gina Gardner and Friends, the show that shares stories from inspiring people, from a wide range of expert guests, all focused on helping you live a happier, more successful, and fulfilling life. Gina Gardner is a multiple number one international best-selling author, motivational speaker, business coach, and trainer. She's the founder of Genuinely You and has over 30 years' experience of helping people step into their genuine, authentic power, personally and professionally.
Matthew.
Huh? Whoa, sorry.
It's okay. I just need you to listen to me.
I know that a lot of times, Mom, it might not seem like I'm listening to you, but I am. I hear you. And what you say really does matter to me.
I mean, let's be honest. No kid likes rules, but I get why we have them. I hear you, and I know it's because you care.
For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
And now, here's your host, Gina Gardner.
Hello there, and a huge welcome to today's episode of Gina Gardner and Friends. I'm joined today by Bob Little. He's a polymath. He has a wide range of interests. He's a writer, a publicist, and a singer, and he's done so many different things. And we're going to be talking today about embracing the opportunities that life offers each of us. So, Bob, a huge welcome to the show. Thank you very much for joining me.
No, thank you for inviting me. I'm looking forward to it. That'd be great.
Let's start by giving people a sort of potted version of how you come to be here.
It's obviously very difficult because I don't know that anybody ever sets out on a real sort of path to get to where they are in life anyway. But it has been a chapter of accidents. So I have to say that I always wanted to be a singer. I always wanted, after I stopped wanting to be a bus driver at about the age of three, I always wanted to be a writer. And I had no idea how I was ever going to make any of those things come true. What happened was, it first started when I went to university, and I made a huge mistake of not finding anywhere to live until I had got my place at university, which I know is a mistake now, but I didn't then, and I had to find somewhere to live, and I went to live at a Baptist Theological College, who they had some spare rooms. And because I went there, I thought, well, I ought to be good, and I'll turn up to college prayers. Now, college prayers happened at 7 o'clock every morning. And so as a student, that was really hard to do. But I went and did that. But there was a girl there who had come in to study for the Baptist ministry. And after a couple of weeks, she decided it wasn't for her. She left. Now, that was great. But the principal of the college had sorted out all the students' preaching engagements for the term. Okay. So he was one person short. So the next thing I knew was I got a knock on my door, and my next door neighbor came in and said to me, "Now look," he said, "we've seen you coming to college prayers, and we think you should go and preach for the college." And I had no thought of doing that, but I thought that it would be very rude if I didn't. So I said yes. So the next Sunday, a few days later, found me going up the Rhondda Valley in South Wales to conduct a service in Welsh at a Welsh Baptist chapel. And I knew just about enough Welsh to be able to get through the service. And I thought, well, that's that. But apparently the church thought I was so good that they sent back a good report about me. And so I got involved the next week, thankfully, at a Baptist church that worshipped through the medium of English, which was, I was a lot happier about that. And that started the whole thing. And then I just sort of kept doing it. People kept asking me. And then when I came up to the London area to continue my other love, which was studying singing, I took all the various qualifications and things and became a nationally recognized Baptist lay minister, and which I've done ever since. So that was that part of it. The singing, I wanted to learn to be an opera singer, and I studied at the Welsh College of Music and Drama in Cardiff, and then came up to London to study with a man who just finished being a principal tenor at the Royal Opera House in Covent Garden for 30 years. And While I did that, I needed to find something to do to get an income. And I worked as a training officer, which was a management training officer. So that got me into the world of business. But as they said, being a training officer in those days where you just stood up and you performed to your 12 trainees in a classroom was just like show business. And so it was. And while I was doing that, the opportunity came for me to start writing. And the organization I worked for had a newspaper which went to all the companies in the road transport industry. There was a little bit of a hiatus and they lost all their staff. And I was asked to look after the publication. It was printed under contract out in Northampton, as it happens, in Northampton. And the people there, the printers and the typesetters, realized if they didn't teach me how to be a journalist very quickly, they would lose the contract. So I got this fantastic instant course in how to be a journalist, and I learned how to write copy, cast off copy, take photographs, sell advertising, everything. And I did that for a number of years. Then that job was obvious that it was going to finish. And I thought, well, what can I do? And I thought, I know, I'll tell people I'm a PR consultant and see if anybody believes me. And three companies believed me. They took me on and basically they paid me to learn how to be a public relations consultant. I know how to do it now, but that was how I got started in that business. And then I started not just doing PR, but I started writing for the companies that were employing me, started to get my work published, and it went on from there. I started to get offers from all around the world to go and work, because I worked in a very particular niche area of online learning technologies. And so I went to work for companies in the United States, in India. The Tatas took me to India to work with them in Mumbai. I got offers from companies in Italy and Croatia and, you know, all around Europe. And the Tatas even took me to Australia to do some work for them. So it's been fantastic from that point of view. I've seen the world at other people's expense, and that's terrific. And I've met some great people and done a lot of things. There we are. That's longer than you expected, wasn't it? I'm sorry.
That's fine. The one thing that comes through from your conversation is your, I'm just going to call it ability, but your willingness, I think, to say yes. That when an opportunity presented itself, many people would think, oh, I'm not sure about that. I don't know what I'm doing. Maybe not. And would close the door. But I find it very interesting that your approach to life, or certainly when we've got the potted version, I'm sure that there were hiccups along the way, was this is something new, it's a challenge, I'm going to go for it. And I think as a way of being, what it does is expands your life. It gives you the opportunity to step out of what most people call their comfort zone. But very often it acts like a jail. It keeps people playing small. What's the advice you'd give to somebody who was starting out in their professional life now in terms of grabbing opportunities?
Well, I think the short answer is always take the opportunities if you can. Now, it worked with singing, for example. I trained as an opera singer and I got some work as an opera singer, but I couldn't make it pay because although I was being at that time under contract as a principal tenor with a traveling opera company, they only paid me per performance, and I couldn't afford to live on that. But I did then go and audition twice for the Royal Opera at Covent Garden. And I didn't get in either time. And I thought, well, that's, you know, it's great to try, but it's time to give up and go on. But then some years later, I met a man at a party who had been the administrator of the Royal Opera House in Covent Garden. And I said to him, oh, you know, I came and auditioned twice for you and I didn't get in. And he said, well, why did you stop? And I said, well, I thought two goes would be enough. And he said, not many people know this, he said, but Dame Joan Sutherland, who was a great operatic diva, took five auditions to get into Covent Garden, and she was being promoted by her husband, Richard Bonning. So he said, you should have just kept turning up. We would have taken you eventually. And you think, there you are. That's a little bit of a lesson that I didn't really learn at the time and should have learned, that you should keep doing these things. So basically, you're right. Say yes to the opportunities. Learn on the job, because it's much easier once you're there, once you're as part of a job, you're behind the, you've got past the gatekeepers of that profession, if you like, then it's a lot easier to be accepted. So always do that, and really never really give up, as I did on my you know, professional singing career like that, because eventually it would work.
You know, if you look particularly in publishing, for example, if you want to find a publisher, I think of J.K. Rowling, for example, who's purported to have gone to over 140 publishers before she found one that had faith in her. My goodness, aren't the others kicking themselves? And the
same, yes, absolutely.
With Mark Victor Hansen, he too, for Chicken Soup for the Soul, went to hundreds of different publishers before they found right one. We're going to go for a short break now, but when we come back, what I'd like to broaden this out into in terms of opportunities that are not just around work, because I think our lives are enriched so much by our hobbies and by the things that we do. So please don't go away. We'll be back in just a minute.
We've arrived, Mr. Dog.
Time to slip in. All righty up. Get this paper. Looking good, dog. Tony, get Marcus the ball.
Man, are you sure you ate?
I'm 9, actually.
Hey, Snoop, how do all this stuff?
Sketches, baby. Shoes made for all walks of life.
Get your feet off the desk.
Dyson Airwrap has new engineered attachments that control high-velocity air to harness the Coanda effect. To create curls faster, shape with precision, and now hide flyaways. Create your styles with air, not extreme heat. Customize your air app only at Dyson.com.
Welcome back. We're talking about how embracing the opportunities that life offers you can really make a huge difference to the quality of your life. And I want to talk about the fact that opportunities that don't always turn up as being something that feels really positive at the time. Sometimes the opportunities within life are when, you know, life hands us a bum deal, and we can choose to use those opportunities to fuel us moving forward or to keep us stuck. So in your experience, have you had opportunities of both varieties, and has there been a difference in the way you've handled them?
You know about the answer to that last one. Yes, there have been lots of opportunities that didn't look good at the time. So, for example, when I started my PR business, that was on the back of being made redundant. Yeah. So I didn't have a job. I had a young family with some young children, and I had a mortgage, and I really needed to find something to do. And I also thought that I needed to find a job that would pay, you know, enough to maintain the lifestyle. So yes, that was a bad deal. And then you think, well, no, come on, I'm going to make it work. You have got to work at making it work. But yeah, does that answer your question?
I think it does. And I'm thinking, you know, I was just speaking to somebody earlier today who'd been through the most dreadful traumas in their life. And yet they use those almost as the rocket fuel to help them create a life that on anybody's terms would be incredibly successful. And I think, you know, opportunities every day, every choice that we make is an opportunity for us to make the most of what's going on, or to give in to being a victim. And I think it's important, yeah, when we talk about opportunities, so often people talk about the great ones, the ones that look wonderful from the start. But ultimately, I think life is consistently offering us a range of opportunities, and what we do with it and how it's going to turn out is how we turn up.
Well, absolutely. But I think part of the problem perhaps could be illustrated by what we do when we network. So okay, if you are running a business, if you're looking for clients, if you're whatever, the thing that you have to do is to network.
Yes.
And the people who are very bad at networking, they go to an event, they go into a room, they see a whole load of people, and they think, oh, I couldn't possibly talk to all those people because there's, you know, 50 or 100 people, and I can't possibly cope with that. And you find them at these sort of events, you find those sort of people up against a wall somewhere in a corner, sipping their coffee and sort of looking apprehensively at people. That's not how you should be doing it. If you go and see your 100 people in a room, all you ever need to do is find 3 people in that room who will give you work. And so rather than be overawed by the situation or the opportunity, you just break it down and you go around and you introduce your, well, hopefully you don't introduce yourself. You go to the other person first and you say, you know, what are you looking for here? Why are you here? What is it that you're looking for? And then see whether you can answer their need. And if you can, you've got a client. If you can't answer their need, you offer them the name of somebody you know who can help, and then you've made a friend, and that will lead to work as well. And that's the way that you should be doing these things and taking these opportunities, I feel.
I think that you, there's huge wisdom in what you say. And I would say to someone going to a networking group, that's a big chunk of time. So do your preparation if you can beforehand, see who's going, and ideally identify who you'd like to speak to at those. But ultimately work on the basis of making the other person feel comfortable, making the other person feel seen and heard and valued. That takes the pressure off you. And when you do that, people then will respond to you in a very much more positive way than if you go in for the hard sell or you just don't talk to them.
Absolutely. It is, you get more clients and you get more friends by actively listening to people than by telling them your alleged elevator pitch, which, yeah, everybody knows about elevator pitches and everybody discounts them. But you're right. The thing that also struck me from what you were saying before the break was that I know very few people. Do I know anybody at all? I don't think so, who is very successful by just focusing on what they do.
Yes, I think that's very
everybody
true.
You meet who is really successful and a really interesting person to talk to, and you know, and that you'd like to talk to, have a number of interests. And I think it is so important to maintain as many interests as possible. I know Margaret Thatcher, not everybody liked Margaret Thatcher, I know Margaret Thatcher sort of said, you can do up to 3 things well, and after that, things start to fall over. But it is important to do those 3 things, I think.
I'd take it even further. I think people buy from people. And that, yeah, you know, if you are someone who has a range of interests and takes an interest in other things, then you become more interesting for people to talk to. And so you may do 3 things really well, But I would say broaden your outlook and try lots of things, because in doing so, you may find things that you'd never thought of that actually you really enjoy. And sometimes it's great to do it, even if you're not very good at it. If you enjoy it and it gives you a sense of achievement or an interest, then they're worth doing, even if you're not going to be a master at it.
Well, one of the interesting things is that when you're really interested in what you're doing, very often the people that you meet doing one of those activities will help you in one of your other fields, and you didn't realize they could do that until it happened. So, for example, some years ago, I used to work with a very, very good pianist, and he and I would perform songs and what have you in various concerts a lot. And I noticed one day, I read in the newspaper that a man called Don Howe, who at the time was the assistant England football manager, lived not very far away from me, just down the road. And I said to my friend, who I knew lived in the same place, in the same village, I said to my friend when we were rehearsing, "Did you know that Don Howe lives in your village?" And he said, "Well, yes, of course he does. He lives next door to me. Why? Are you interested?" You know, I said, "I'd love to interview him." And he said, "Oh, don't worry about that. I'll arrange it." So I then got an interview with the assistant England football manager. We talked about management training, not about football, because that's not really what I'm interested in. But I would never have got that opportunity to interview an England football manager if it hadn't have been through my friend who was a musician.
Yes. Well, the connections that people have, I find are really fascinating. Indeed, the interests that people have. Sometimes when you talk to someone, particularly in a business context, you're never going to know that they were an opera singer or that they were a cricket fan or whatever. We've got to go for a short break now, but please don't go away. There's still a lot to talk about. See you in a minute.
Catch me smiling when you look my way. Yeah, I'm back on course now. It's a whole new day. Now I love Mondays. Mondays are working for me. I can be the person that I want to be. Now that I'm certain, my Mondays are working for me.
Find a job you'll love at reed.co.uk.
I love your place.
Thanks. Could you grab some carrots?
Sure. What's this?
That's for Pepper.
You keep dog food in your fridge?
It's not dog food. It's fresh pet. Real meat, real veggies.
That you feed your dog. So it's dog food.
You were so right about her.
Fresh pet. It's not dog food. It's food food.
Welcome back. Now, I know that one of your interests, big interests, passions, I would say, is writing, and that you are an author. Do you want to talk to us about your book?
Yes, I'd love to talk to you about my book. Please buy my book, of course. It's called, what is it called? It's called Bob's Exploratory Theological Adventures. Now,
Bob, that is a bit of a mouthful.
Yes, it is. But if you look at the initial letters, they spell beta, and that I thought that it was a good thing, because it's not quite the finished article. It's just something there. But yes, it is quite a mouthful. Bob's Exploratory Theological Adventures, and it's really a series of, it's 144 articles, as it turns out. That's not significant in any way. But I used to write an article for my church's magazine, which was published every month. And I wrote a sort of an article of about 300 to 500 words. And that was great. But one day, our editor of the church magazine said, "Church magazines are dead. Nobody reads them. We're going to finish publishing." And I was very sad about that because I'd written about 7 years worth of these articles ready to go. And then I thought, well, I've got a whole load of words that are written and nobody's ever going to read them. What am I going to do about it? And then what about all the articles that I've had published in the magazine in the past? So I bundled them all up together and I thought, I wonder if a publisher would be interested. And thankfully, I knew a publisher who said, well, it's not the sort of thing that we would normally publish, but since it's you, Bob, I will publish it. And that's how the book came to be. And it's been published and it exists. And I have been, between you and me, because nobody else is listening, I hope, between you and me, I have been amazed at how many people have bought the book. Now, why would you buy the book? Well, you would buy the book if you were perhaps a preacher who was looking for some rather sort of quirky, offbeat ideas to use yourself. And that's perfectly fine. You might buy it if you were a church leader, like a secretary or whatever, because the things that are in the book you could dip into and read should your preacher, your advertised preacher, for some reason not turn up on a Sunday or any other time. So you wouldn't ever be caught short for something inspirational to give to your congregation. But thirdly, you might be interested in it because you were interested in faith, I think, from a Christian perspective, but a faith approach to life and spirituality, admittedly from a Christian perspective, and that might give you some different ideas. And the idea is really to sort of ask so that you ask some questions of yourself. It's not a prescriptive book by any means.
So one of the things that strikes me is, for me, faith is really a big part of my life, not necessarily around organized religion, but certainly around the way in which I operate in life and people operate, and believing that there is a higher force. So if you're not somebody who is a churchgoer, for example, would there be something in the book for them?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. You might find it a bit challenging because I think some of the messages that there would be there would be along the lines of, it's very difficult to be a Christian. That's not, you can be spiritual, but it's difficult to be a Christian without being involved with a church community, because I would want to argue that Jesus didn't sort of just deal with individuals. He actually called a group of people together, and that was all about mutual support and love and so on. And that's what being it's what the Christian community is all about, and especially in local communities. Anybody would be, it would be of interest to anybody. Yeah.
We're almost at the end of the show, and we're very proud to belong to B1G1, Buy One, Give One, which is an organization which makes giving a regular part of your business. Every penny or every cent goes to the projects involved, and they're all very well vetted. And one of the things that I do is I invite every one of my guests to choose one of the projects, and we donate to that on your behalf. We have the same four themes every month, but I choose different projects within those themes. And the themes are clean water, education, health, and reforestation. Which of those four would you like to choose?
They are all extremely valuable and very, very good. Let me choose water.
Okay, thank you. And just remember that by listening to the show, that you help too, because we donate meals for the hungry based on the number of listeners on the show. So just by listening, you are helping, and do please spread the word. Bob, thank you very much for being on the show. I really appreciate it. And thank you all for listening. Really do appreciate your joining us. Love to hear what you think. Please email me at Gina Gardiner and Friends, Gardiner, GARDINER. So that's Gina Gardiner and Friends at gmail.com. Love to hear what you think. And also be really interested to know, what sort of things you'd like on the show. So thanks very much for joining me. Please join me tomorrow. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Gina Gardner and Friends, the show that helps you live a happier, more successful, and fulfilling life. To learn more about Gina Gardner, go to genuinely-you.com. If you would like to work with Gina or book her as a speaker, email her at gina@genuinely-you.com.